and asked Todd Campbell to come up for the first presentation.
Thank you, Jane. Good morning, everyone. Today I'm going to talk about a project focusing on looking at trends in U.S. cotton yield productivity since 1980. And as I begin today, I first want to acknowledge my co-authors, Debbie Boykin and Zaid Abdo. They're both area statisticians in ARS. And of course, we all know Bill Meredith, retired research geneticist. So this project revolves around a Crop Science Society book. Many of you may have read the first version of this book called Yield Gains in Major U.S. Field Crops. I think it was published in around 1984. Well, this project that I'm going to be talking about today was version two of the story. And essentially this book, each chapter is a different crop, and we were asked to write the chapter on cotton. So in the chapter, we focus on on-farm productivity changes occurring, genetic contributions to those productivity changes, and we offer some future prospects. And the focus of this story is 1980 to present. So we'll first revisit part one of this story that was written in 1984. Bill Meredith and Bob Bridge were the authors of this story. In looking at on-farm productivity, these are the measurements you see on the screen that they came up with, but I'll focus on 1961 to 1980. They actually estimated a decrease in on-farm productivity during this time period. However, in their estimation of genetic contributions, they estimated consistently a 0.75% per year genetic gain. So this was quite alarming at the time, and for at least, well, I'd say for the last 20 years, this has been something that has caused great concern in the cotton world. And this is, they were able to estimate genetic contributions or genetic gain occurring during this time, but it wasn't being translated into on-farm productivity. So before I dig into the bulk of my presentation, I wanted to highlight production changes that have occurred since 1980, and I just want to really briefly highlight three areas that are not all-inclusive, I might add. Of course, boll weevil eradication has been a major change in production that has obviously increased productivity. Also, the development and adoption of short season production systems in some parts of the cotton belt have been instrumental in production changes occurring this time. And of course, we all know that transgenic technology has resulted in a big change in our production system. And that occurred in the mid-1990s. So these are kind of a backdrop to keep in mind as I focus on genetics later on in the talk. So in terms of on-farm productivity changes since 1980, we obtained data from the USDA National Ag Statistics Service, and we basically obtained all the upland data from 81 to 2012. And we did a series of simple linear regressions, regressing yield on year. And we did this based on the U.S.-wide data, and we also regionalized the data, as is shown on the slide here, into four major regions: Eastern, Mid-South, Plains, and Western. And so through this estimation, I'm going to breeze through this part of the talk. We estimated on-farm productivity, considering the U.S.-wide data, at 13.3 kilogram per hectare. But one thing that we noticed when we started looking at the data a little deeper, there seemed to be a natural break in this time period about 1996 that just happened to coincide with the adoption of transgenic production systems. So with that in mind, we decided to estimate linear regressions before the advent of transgenic production systems and after the adoption of transgenic production systems. And essentially what we found, the time period before the adoption of transgenic production systems, we saw a smaller rate of on-farm productivity increase, at estimated at 4.9 kilograms per hectare per year. And then we saw a big jump in on-farm productivity, 1996 to 2012, of 22.4 kilograms per hectare per yield per year. And so we all know that transgenics have been rapidly adopted over this period of time. 10 to 15% of the area was transgenic in 97, and in 2012 the number I found was that 94% of the area was planted to transgenics. And of course, with the adoption of transgenic systems came many pluses. A couple of them are identified here: adoption of conservation tillage practices, improved weed and insect control, and reduced pesticide use. So what about the contribution to genetics to productivity? And this is what I'm going to spend most of my time talking about today. To get a handle on this, which is a very difficult task, we utilize the National Cotton Variety Test data set. And I want to acknowledge Ellen Keene, who handles the data management in this project, and Patricia Mall. They were able to get me the data that I wanted to look at to analyze. So why is this trial unique and beneficial to do something like this? It's really an excellent trial data set to do this because of three primary reasons. It's regionalized with consistent testing sites. It's organized so that 3 to 5 national standard cultivars are in 3-year cycles, and there's national standard carryover between cycles. So you can make inferences across cycles and across years, which is what we're really after in this type of analysis. So this just shows a description of the trials and locations that we used in this particular analysis. The 4 regions: Eastern, Mid-South, Plains, and Western. 3 locations within each region from 81 to 2012. And so the first thing we did here, this slide shows the national standard cultivars that were carried over this time period, and we use this information to develop a standardized national standard so that we could standardize the data across cycles to make inferences. So we use this standardized national standard to adjust the mean of the high 3 cultivars in each year. And then we took the deviation and used it as a Y variable in a mixed model analysis over time. And so 2 key points. Our statistical analysis allowed for us to control for genetic differences that may be present between national standards. And it also allowed us to control for environmental effects per year and within each location across years. So this is a busy slide, but it shows the results of our mixed model analysis of variance. We show the fixed effects and the random effects here. And basically with our model here, we incorporated 2 different time periods: the time period before transgenic technology and the time period after transgenic technology. So I want to go to 2 fixed effects that I want to focus on in this slide. We'll start from the bottom up. The year by region by year group effect was non-significant, which meant it's very important because it meant that the trends we saw between the 2 different time periods before and after transgenic production systems were consistent across regions. And then the other term here the year-by-year group term, that's important, and it tested the difference between the slopes between the time period before transgenics and after transgenics. So we can see that's highly significant. So there was a significant difference between those before transgenics and after transgenics. So to present this in a little easier way to understand, this slide shows the regression of the deviation from the national standard average across the four regional trials. So this is the US-wide data. And so if you look on the left side of the red line, vertical line, the slope we estimated for the time period before the adoption of transgenic cultivars was about 5 kilograms per hectare per year. And we see a dramatic increase in the slope after the adoption of transgenics, 21.6 kilograms per hectare per year. We were able to do a statistical test. We did a simple t-test to look at the difference between these slopes, and we saw there was a highly significant difference between those slopes. So what this means is the rate of genetic gain was different in the time period after transgenics and before transgenics, significantly different. So in concluding these data, increased productivity to genetic gain we saw in the time period before transgenics, about 5 kilograms per hectare per year, after transgenic, nearly 22 kilograms per hectare per year. So in version two of this story, remember version one, I said they estimated genetic gains that weren't being translated into on-farm data. The story is different now. We are seeing genetic gains that we measured in our analysis that are being translated and realized in on-farm productivity gains. So, of course, you're asking the question probably just like I did, what's going on with this big change in genetic gain after the adoption of transgenic cultivar systems? Certainly there's an impact of the transgenic trait itself, or traits, but that does not explain the whole difference in the large increase in genetic gain. So I go back to this on-farm productivity data, and we looked at these data. And if you think about the adoption of transgenic production systems, there was a first generation of transgenic products that came to the market. And these occurred from 95 to 2004. And I think these data show a smaller productivity increase with these products. And if you think about how these products were developed, they were developed exclusively through backcross breeding by moving the transgene into old genetic backgrounds. However, when you look at that, at the more recent cultivars, I think they you can see a larger, a steeper increase in productivity, and I think clearly these represent genetic improvements that have been realized through forward breeding. So there's still backcross breeding going on to move transgenes, but there's an awful lot of activity into improving genetic backgrounds through forward breeding. I think it's been realized. So in conclusion, forward breeding practices have improved genetic backgrounds. I think that's clear. And I think one key point that I wanted to make was that the increased scale of evaluation data has paralleled increased private investment. And what I mean by that is we just have more data points in evaluating cultivars coming to market. And for the breeders out there, you know, the more looks you can get at a potential cultivar, the more confident you are in that line becoming a cultivar. However, with that said, although there's been an enormous increase in private investment, public sector programs continue to provide new germplasm resources. I queried crop science and journal plant registrations, and since 2000, there have been 250 germplasm lines and or cultivars that have been officially released from public institutions. And of course, these materials have been utilized in development of newer cultivars and will continue to. But of course, one thing that's really important that I haven't really talked about today in thinking about the future is I asked the question, what about fiber quality? We all know that's essential for global competitiveness. And I'm not going to go into a great deal of detail, but I think in looking at data over this time period, I think fiber quality has been neglected to some point. Neglected is kind of a strong word, but we haven't seen the increases in fiber quality that we have with yield, and there are reasons for that. We all know there's a negative relationship that has been very difficult to work with over the last 100 years in our breeding programs, but I think in the future we're going to have to focus on fiber quality in concert with yield productivity in the future. So my last slide, I think the future is bright for cotton productivity gains. I think clearly since 1980 we have seen productivity increases. It's kind of a different story than version one. I think in the future, these three areas that I highlight, germplasm enhancement, transgenic technology, and molecular breeding, are all going to play a role in new cultivars and continued genetic gain. And I think one of the areas that's a mystery to me, at least, but has enormous potential, is molecular breeding. We've seen advances through germplasm enhancement and transgenic technology, and will continue to do so. But molecular breeding may offer a lot of potential for raising the bar even more in the future. Thank you.
Are there any questions?
No, we didn't. I had two statisticians on this project, and I can't speak to the specifics, and I wish they were in the audience, but they did some statistics to look for the natural break in the data, and they found one natural break. This is before we even discussed the adoption of transgenic technology and when it occurred. They found a natural break in the data in around 1995, 1996. And they had statistical support to break the data into those areas. So we didn't do that, but it might be worth looking into for sure.
Okay.